All right. Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Navigating No Contact with Toxic Parents. I'm your host, Tracy Principe. And today I have a really special guest that I'm very excited about. And this is going to be a great conversation. Today, my guest is Miranda Pacchiana. And she is a writer, social worker, personal coach, survivor of childhood sexual abuse and its aftermath. And she lives and works in Newtown, Connecticut. So, yeah, thanks so much for being here today, Miranda. Really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, and I do want to mention that your website is thesecondwound.com.
It's actually, yes, it's called The Second Wound, and the address is secondwound.com.
Secondwound.com. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then your podcast, you also have a podcast called Truth and Consequences.
Yeah, and you can find that through the Second Wound website.
Okay, wonderful. So let's start with, you know, what is the Second Wound and how did that come about?
Mm-hmm. Second Wound is a term that I coined from my own experiences. So as you mentioned, I am a survivor of child sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And in my case, and everyone's story is different, I never forgot the abuse, but I found a way to file it away and go on, mm-hmm. you know, compartmentalizing it and not addressing
yeah.
it because I didn't really have that opportunity until I was in my mid-20s and I was in a much more emotionally safe place in my life,
yeah.
in a stable relationship with a new marriage. And I had moved away. And I had a therapist I really trusted and had been working with for a little while. And I finally decided I'm ready to talk about these experiences and what they mean.
Yeah.
And I was actually in social work school at the time. So it was a very interesting time for me.
Yeah.
And I dove into the work with my therapist, with my husband's support, with a close inner circle. And it was, you know, it was really, really hard work. Addressing
yeah.
that trauma. I had a lot of emotional fallout from it. Some, you know, I had flashbacks, all those symptoms.
Right.
So moving forward, you know, I began to heal. I really did. I started to feel more whole than I ever had in my life. And I found that as I went on to further address what had happened with my loved ones, with my close inner circle,
mm-hmm.
that was where the problems began.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing the work on what had happened to me, but I was also living in the real world today. And I was
right.
finding that the people that I loved the most, you know, aside from my husband and my friends, were really pushing back. And I was feeling unheard, and I was feeling like what I had lived through was being minimized.
Yeah.
So that was really confusing for me. I never expected that to happen. And I spoke up for myself a lot. I fought it. I set boundaries. You know, I worked on it on and off. It became this whole second wound, this whole aftermath of what I had lived through that
right.
really never got any better. And in the first few years that this was happening, I'm a new social worker. I started looking at the literature, you know, journal articles, research on sexual abuse and what happens to survivors. And I wanted someone to explain to me what was happening and why. It
yeah.
didn't make sense to me. And so I really could barely find anything that helped me. And I decided I was going to start writing about it. And that's
wow.
when the first step that I took was to start a Facebook page. I started mm-hmm. doing some essays, personal essays that I had published online. And as this community started on Facebook, people found my work and they started saying, me too, me too, me too. This is exactly what has happened to me. I felt so alone. I feel so
yeah.
confused. And I learned so much from them and vice versa. So it's been, I don't know, maybe 5 years now
mm-hmm.
since that first Facebook page. And now I'm on all the platforms and I have a pretty extensive website that talks about these topics. And
yeah.
And it is incredibly common. I don't know what the I don't think anyone's ever researched it. And right. I have a self-selected population I'm working with that I coach mm-hmm. and hear from online, but it seems to be that it's at least as common to have loved ones and family, you know, fail to support you and re-wound you in similar ways to the abuse than it is to be truly supported and believed and have people adapt their behaviors accordingly. Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, our listeners and followers overlap. So I'm sure that you see a lot of this as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we don't, you know, these dysfunctional family systems, it's always hard to comprehend why almost always, across the board is the entire system sides with the abuser. And that, of course, like you said, can be just as devastating as the abuse itself, the incident, the experience of having nobody, no family members. And then what oftentimes, you know, what happens is these family members say, oh, well, you know, that was a long time ago. You should get over it. So-and-so has been really good to our family because, you know, a lot of times it's tied around money and absolutely. So I hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. They've helped us a lot and all this kind of stuff. So yes. There's that aspect. And then sometimes, again, if the survivor doesn't have a memory or the memories are fragmented or, you know, they have the more implicit body memory, they might think, well, yeah, maybe I should just forget about it and try to make this work. Mm-hmm. They get confused. Yeah.
Yes. So let me address that and then we can back up a little bit and I can get more detailed about what the common hurtful responses are from family and loved ones.
Great.
It is very common for survivors of trauma, including and especially child sexual abuse, which is extremely traumatic, to have fragmented and memories, have flashbacks, have kind of knowledge without the memories attached. Mm-hmm. These That's things, right. the body responses, the emotional responses, but we encode those memories in a fragmented way because of the trauma.
Right.
And a lot of people don't really understand that and may not trust their own, what their body and their emotions are telling them. And especially if your family members are encouraging you to doubt that.
Right.
And they have their own reasons for not wanting to believe this.
Yeah.
It puts you on your back feet and it is confusing and it is not healthy for your healing.
Absolutely.
So I do just want to absolutely validate that, you know, not everybody has specific memories like I do. And my memories also are not on a, you know, a complete timeline where I was this age and this happened. And I was a child for one thing. But, you know, trauma gets in the way of linear recall.
Right.
So, you know, I just want to get to the heart of the matter, which is what are these kinds of hurtful behaviors? And it can start with, sounds like you got work done.
Work getting done everywhere, huh? Have to edit that out. Yeah, there's trimming trees. What a day.
Oh, my gosh. So, first of all, tragically, many survivors who come forward flat out are not believed. Sometimes there's lip service to, okay, I'm sorry that happened. But then, you know, later on, people will say, are you sure? You know, it doesn't seem like that person would ever do that. Yeah. So failure to believe. And even what a lot of people don't realize that is even when people do believe you, that is not necessarily a cure and answer because there is all kinds of minimization that goes on.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, it's time to move on. And all kinds of other, you know, was it really that bad? Can we talk about something else now? Haven't we already gone through this?
Yeah.
And it's not that survivors are drama queens. It's not that we want to live in the past. It's that our bodies and our emotions are still responding in certain ways. And oftentimes there is an issue with the actual abuser. We don't want to be in the same place with them. And that is healthy and normal. And that is happens because we are shedding our denial and facing our truth. So that should be encouraged and supported.
Yeah.
So there's minimization, which is so hurtful to have the people who love you the most not hear you. Yeah. And what I always tell survivors, and this was kind of a revelation for me to come to, because it's not how we're treated. You, survivor, are the only authority on what you lived through and how you feel now and what you need. You are the authority, and people need to defer to you when you tell them how you feel and what you need and what you lived through.
Yeah.
I wish that happened a lot more. Often we are blamed for we're the troublemakers, right? Everyone was doing fine until you kicked this up, and you keep wanting to talk about it. And we could have had these nice family occasions with everyone invited until you started these problems.
That's
upside down and backwards, because the problem was started when somebody violated us.
Yeah. That's right.
Right.
That's such a big, that's a big one too, because I hear from a lot of survivors, again, that they got in trouble. They got punished for this, you know, somebody violating them.
Again, it's so confusing, and it's upside down and backwards.
It really, truly is.
It's victim blaming 101, and it can happen on a long-term basis.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's scapegoating. That's treating us like a black sheep in the family.
Yeah.
And so the result that often happens is that we are ostracized. And, you know, a classic story I hear all the time, it's a family reunion, it's Christmas or Hanukkah, and you're invited, but so is your abuser. And if you can't handle that, I guess you can't come. Or you're not even invited, because they'd rather have that person there.
Yes.
And that can often go back to what you were referring to before, which is that oftentimes abusers have dominating personalities. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of money and power that they spread around, and people benefit from, and that's by design.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we are at a disadvantage when it comes down to choosing one or the other. And that's not necessarily what we're asking either, is to choose this person, you know, don't love this person anymore. We're just saying you need to respect that my trauma needs to be respected.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that said, you know, it's like, you know, where do you go with this thing that, you know, is so insidious in families and then society too? It's everywhere. So the survivor is kind of just stuck holding all of this burden, and they're scared to just, you know, I want to get my voice out because it's hurting my body. And where do I do that? How do I find, you know, a platform where I'm going to be seen and heard and validated? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it is so important to speak and to use your voice, and you do need to find a safe place to do that. And, you know, therapy is a wonderful place. There, you know, as you know, there are all forms of trauma therapy and talk therapy. It is often hard to find someone great that you click with, but I would suggest that people keep trying, even if it takes 10 people. Before you find the right one. And that's hard to do, but it is really important. If you can find support groups as well, again, that's hard. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a support group of survivors. The first support group I was in was just for women, and it was women dealing with anxiety, depression, you know, challenges in life. And I benefited hugely, I think, in some ways, because not everyone was a survivor. And so the fact that they didn't, you know, see me as dirty or tainted in any way, which I was still carrying within me.
Yeah.
That really, really dramatically helped my healing in a way that I couldn't do one-on-one with a therapist.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, come to my website and my online pages and yours and see that you're not alone. You know, comment if you feel comfortable doing it. People will often respond and show you support. Coaches like you and I, that, you know, I work with survivors who are living the second wound, and I am able to understand it firsthand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I do think it is so, so important. And, you know, a major reason that I put all this information out there is because I don't want people to have the problem I had, which it was being blindsided and just completely confused.
Right.
And to find out through my discovery that it is a phenomenon, and it has a set of, you know, they vary here and there, but it has a set of components that are somewhat universal, and
yeah,
it's not your fault and you're not alone.
Yeah. And going back to that universe, you know, the set of components within these dysfunctional families, you know, earlier you said it is sometimes, oftentimes it is about power. I, you know, would think that's the majority, power, money. And then these people might even be really charismatic and, an outstanding citizen. They might even have lots of friends and all that. Right. Is there anything? And then within that dysfunctional family, there's that intergenerational trauma at play, right? Where there might have been sexual abuse passed down.
Yes.
Whether you know the history.
Component.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything, yes. What other aspects of that make this so insidious and difficult to get through?
Well, denial is a big component.
Yeah, denial.
And denial of, I mean, if you think about it, if someone in your family came to you and said, this person within our family abused me,
yeah,
or within our inner circle, it's not, you know, necessarily a family member, but that is a very, very painful thing to take in.
Yeah.
And if you are going to do the right thing and you are going to address it appropriately, you know, there's a possibility it could break up the family. It could break up a marriage. It could reveal this person as an offender to the outside world. And I'm not saying that that's okay for people to, you know, abandon or betray a survivor for these reasons, but we're talking about human nature. And I do think it helps to understand where this comes from. Okay. So, you know, intergenerational abuse, absolutely. Sexual abuse, it spreads through families, especially when it's not addressed. And it becomes normalized. It becomes hidden away and perpetuated. And when people turn a blind eye to that, it allows it to continue. So oftentimes the people you're talking to have experienced it themselves, and they're not dealing with it.
Right.
They don't want to go there.
Yeah.
Maybe it happened on their watch. Maybe they contributed to the environment somehow, and they don't want to look at that. So they would much rather push you away and label you as the problem, label you as crazy or unstable or whatever they want to call you.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of diagnoses that are put on traumatized people as well that aren't necessarily accurate. Sometimes they're helpful. But you know, it's sort of the trope of the crazy woman or crazy survivor.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another thing too is that I've seen within this family system, there could be a sibling, you know, that has also experienced that abuse from that family member that is still siding with that abuser themselves, even though, you know, and so you've got this one lone scapegoat Sibling, where some of the other siblings have also experienced that same abuse, but they're not willing to, you know, go there yet, I guess.
Yep, absolutely. So oftentimes that scapegoat is the person in the family. Maybe they've always been this person in the family who speaks the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Often it's the person who's essentially the little kid in the fable about the emperor having no clothes. It's the one person who's saying, hey, wait a minute, he's naked.
Right.
And everyone's saying, hush, hush, hush. You know, don't rock the boat. And so that sibling who also went through the same thing doesn't have that, I guess at that point in their life, at least, doesn't have it within them to face it the way that you are. And also they may see all that fallout that you're getting and really not want to have that happen to them, not want to side with the person who's being scapegoated, because then some of that will rub off on them, right?
Right. So true.
But it's very painful. It's very painful when that happens. And you'd think that you have an ally, but in fact, often it does work the opposite way, because that person has more, you know, is really emotionally invested in pushing away what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. Just pushing it
away. And I will say, you know, people do change. Things do happen. I have seen it in my own world. Sometimes people wake up to their own histories.
Yeah, that's
and everything
true.
Changes.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't hold out for that. But I also wouldn't assume that there's no hope ever.
Yeah. How often do you see that very often with, you know?
No.
Yeah.
No, not very often.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
But I have seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I work with clients often who are in their 50s and 60s who are starting to deal with this now. And I'm in awe of them and their courage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to, I know my trauma didn't come up till my late 40s. So, you know, not always, but it seems to be this later in life.
Well, 52 is the average age that people come to terms with sexual abuse.
Yeah, that feels accurate. You know, memory might come up or flashbacks might start. Can you talk a little bit more about how, you know, because again, if somebody's never really had, you know, some people again have a little feeling about something that happened, but others don't, and then, you know, something could come up, a flashback or something, and that can be really terrifying.
Oh my gosh, it really is terrifying.
Yeah.
It can be very dramatic and sudden, like you're saying. You can be wide awake with your eyes open and seeing scenes of things that you lived through that you don't even have conscious knowledge of.
Right.
I think that often there are clues along the way that lead up to that moment. If survivors look back, they'll see, I was very I had an emotional reaction to this trigger, what I now see as a trigger, or my anxiety was building. I was misdirecting my anger for a while there before it happened, things like that. And if that happens, people absolutely need and deserve to get help and support, because it's real and it will get better. It will, and you absolutely do need therapeutic support of some kind, you know, maybe medication, who knows, but with those components, it will get better. It's not always going to be like that. And, you know, it's also, the positive side to it is that it's like your psyche is telling you you're ready. You have to do this now. And it, I call it a waking up. It doesn't always look like that. A waking up can take all kinds of forms. For me, it was like, okay, I have these memories intellectually. I know I need to share them. And then slowly I began to incorporate the truth, you know, but it, like I said, it can take different forms, but when you wake up, it's like the beginning of your opportunity to live your life more authentically and to be more in touch with who you are. And that brings you closer to peace every day.
Absolutely. Yeah. So And then going back to, you know, the body, and if those memories or feelings or some somatic, you know, sensations or something going on with the body in terms of, you know, because some people will say like, oh, I just remember this pillow or blanket or, you know, something kind of abstract, and it really, that's all they have, right? But but there is something happening in the body with that, and that's where people get really confused. Like, I don't think this happened, because it's very, you know, just these little things, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I would just say, I can't tell people what happened to them, but I would say most of the time, if your intuition and your instincts and your body and your mind are pointing in this direction, there's a reason. And I would encourage people to trust themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really, really important, because there is that lack of trust. And again, if you have other people that aren't supportive, and then you don't have, you know, that linear path, which many survivors don't have any of that. It can be really hard to say, yeah, I think that's what happened, you know, with these fragmented pieces that don't, oftentimes don't have that linear, sensical.
Sure. And if you have, you know, if you have the people around you that you would hope support and protect you, are encouraging you or discouraging you from following that trail, then, you know, it's natural for people to not want to believe it or not want to go down that path, because it's they're seeing the fallout ahead of them. And that's really unfortunate. And that's why I hope that there are people listening who might hear this and be able to take into account their own responses to people they care about who've lived through sexual abuse and sexual crimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So important. Let's talk about, you know, what are the options, and if we could, you know, talk about a little bit, you know, what are the options for if people want, you know, if they want justice, they want, this person is still out there and perhaps they're harming others, you know? A lot of times, you know, they might be.
Absolutely. And that's a big motivation for survivors, often more so than their own needs to get justice.
Yes, that's right. And it's just this feeling that, you know, this is, you know, this injustice and this unfairness of this person still being in the community and everybody's praising them, you know, or whatever it is. And knowing that this person could very well be harming others still.
Very possible, because most of the time, I think that there are multiple victims involved.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I think that there's a misunderstanding that a lot of people don't realize, that, you know, abusive people are very conscious of the mask they show the world. And you may say, that seems like the nicest guy, I would never do such a thing. I know, because he's this, this, and this, and he's so kind, and he's so giving, and he's so generous. Well, often that's a really great way to get people to trust you and not believe those who come forward.
That's
so you
right.
don't know what's going on when you're not there. You don't know that every side to people.
Yeah, that's right. And oftentimes too, I hear, again, from survivors that say, you know, I thought it was just me. And then now I found out this person, you know, has harmed others. Maybe in the neighborhood or other, you know, family members.
Yes, happens all the time. So
cousins, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So to your question about justice, you know, there's no simple answer to that. But if you do want to pursue, you know, there's the criminal court and the civil court. So criminally, you would need to go report it You know, you could start with making a police report, and then you can find out whether or not the statute of limitations would allow that person to be charged. But even if not, at least you've got a police report. Let's hope the police will take your report and treat you respectfully and sensitively. And then there's the civil path of suing people. Now that assumes that they have means to compensate you if you were to win, that you are able to either pay a lawyer or find a lawyer on contingency who would take your case. And then there's the statutes of limitations are different in every state. And I will direct you to my dear friend and colleague's website, Child U.S. Advocacy, which is a wonderful resource and a wonderful nonprofit. And they are the advocacy arm of Child USA, which is a think tank that fights child abuse, essentially. And they have a map on there of statute of limitations. You can find your state and learn all about what the laws are in your state. And Catherine Robb, the executive director, she has made a lot of strides among other many people working on this to change statutes of limitations by state and open revival windows so that people can sue. Often it's a 1 or 2 year period of time where they open that up, and regardless of the statute of limitations, you can come forward and sue. There is also legislation being advocated for that this would happen to adults, for adults as well, that they could sue for sexual assault and sexual harassment. Because these statute of limitations, they're a real problem because, first of all, victims carry this for life. But just as important, we're talking about very often serial offenders. And we, as a society, have a public vested interest in protecting children by prosecuting and sometimes suing in order to make people aware of the dangers in this person. So it's a really important movement, and it's got a lot of traction in the last couple of years, which is wonderful. So I would encourage people to look into that. There's there's another website, and I can't think of which one it is right now, but I mean, I would throw it. There's, you know, RAIN is a great resource. Darkness to Light is a great resource. The Mama Bear Effect is really helpful in helping to educate children and look for signs of abuse. And I believe it's Child USA or Child US Advocacy have toolkits to help you determine whether you want to, you know, use the legal system and how to do so.
Really great. So it's really great to know that there are resources out there, because again, a lot of people don't even know that this is, you know, exists, or that there is support out, possible support in going these routes of civil, litigation, right? Or at least something available. Usually, because again, it really isn't about money. It's just more that those injustices, and that this person is still surrounded by people that are putting them on a pedestal.
Exactly. And that's dangerous, especially if they are committing offenses against kids or anyone.
Exactly. And that really kind of insulates them.
Yes, it really does. And I think that oftentimes it's like a cycle. People like that are attracted to power, money, fame. Then that allows them to offend and get away with it. And it becomes more and more dangerous.
Exactly. Yeah. And that gets, and then again, that gets perpetuated in that community or family where that person is existing.
They might be the rock star of the family or of the inner circle or in their world where they're a success. And people don't want to confront people who are powerful. They often have aggressive sides, right? Because they don't have healthy psyches if they're offending against people.
And they often have never had anybody stand up to them before.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. So it's self-protection oftentimes when people in your inner circle don't stand up for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And often it's not conscious either, you know.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, to all the survivors and anyone listening going through this, the bravery and courage that it takes to do this is really tremendous.
It really is. Yeah. And my heart goes out to every survivor who has to heal, not just from their original trauma, but mm-hmm. from this secondary trauma. That it's really important for people to understand that we don't have the same kind of control over it. You know,
right.
Our abuse usually is in the past.
Yeah.
It goes on, and it re-victimizes survivors in many of the same ways that we were victimized. It takes our voice. Yeah. It overpowers us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it makes us feel different, and it shames us.
Yeah.
And knowing all of that really does help. And yeah. as painful as it is, and that won't necessarily go away, it can get better, mm-hmm. but we can live good, happy, healthy lives despite that. I really want people to understand that. In the first episode of my podcast, I tell a story about my 50th birthday party a couple years ago. And it was a really special day. I had a big party in our backyard, and a lot of friends were there. And it turns out my friends had sewn me a quilt personalized for me. And the friend who organized it took pictures of everyone, you know, in her house working on it. And they presented it to me at my party. And I wrapped it around myself in this, you know, in this symbol of how I am loved and supported and respected for who I am in the yeah. world that I've created. And I Beautiful. Know that I'm extra fortunate. I do have a wonderful community that I live in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't always work that way to no fault of our own.
Right.
But we can create a new circle of people who hear us.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. And I also want to just touch a little bit on the people that might still be in this, you know, with the family member, where they might feel, and I hear this too, they love that person because maybe mm-hmm. that person did show love and affection and some, you know, some nurturing parenting. So they're mm-hmm. stuck in this place of, part of them feels love for that person. Mm-hmm. And then another part of them feels hate. And mm-hmm. so they're still in the system, very conflicted about that.
Yeah, that does happen. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, first of all, I never tell people to cut someone off or not cut someone off.
Right.
And often it's not a one-time decision. It's right. setting boundaries. It's taking time away. It's trying again. You know, people generally don't want to cut off family members.
Right.
It's a very painful thing. And there's a lot of shame around it. We don't want to admit yeah. it when we do it oftentimes, right? We get judged for it.
Yes.
So I would encourage someone in that position to continue to honor and listen to their feelings as things unfold, to get support and help in psychoeducation in understanding that person's behavior. And, you know, yeah, you're right. People who abuse aren't just always acting like monsters.
Right.
And especially when we're children and they give us love and attention, you know, that's what we know as love. Maybe yeah. that was, maybe true, genuine love isn't in their capacity and that wasn't their true motivation, but that's how we received it.
Right.
And that that's was
right.
real.
Yes.
And that doesn't take that away necessarily. So that's I right. don't, you know, there's no pat answer to the question, but I would say
yeah.
keep doing the work, keep evaluating and using your voice as much as is realistic and possible. Mm-hmm. And yeah. honor what you need.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, and really just honoring where you're at. Because there's no, you know, it's all valid and it all makes sense. It just makes so much
sense. Exactly. And I don't want people to look back and say, I kept trying with that person and now I know I have to cut them off. I have to set a firm boundary. I wish I hadn't done that. But that's because you probably have a big heart and you probably are open-minded and you wanted to give this person a chance. And those are wonderful traits in people. Maybe that person didn't deserve it, but we had to find that out by trying.
Right. That's right. Yeah. That's absolutely right. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up. Do you have any last words, comments, anything? This has been so helpful.
Yeah. I want to just make a point that is kind of a tagline of mine, which is, to any survivor in this position, you are not a troublemaker, you are a truth teller. And there's a huge difference. And oftentimes they get people confuse those two.
Right.
So keep honoring your truth. And it's not an easy road, but ultimately it's the only road.
Yeah, it really is. And it really leads to that internal peace and freedom that I don't know where else we're going to get that from, right? It's like this internal thing that nobody can take that away.
That's so, so true. Yeah. And it's like you have pain that you carry from these reactions, from the rejection and the abandonment. But you do know who you are and you do have more peace every day. And you will continue to bring that into your life if you're true to yourself. Yeah, and you're not alone.
That's right. Wonderful. Beautiful. Well, Miranda, thank you so much. This has just been so helpful to our listeners. Again, Miranda can be found at secondwound.com. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of resources on that website, so go check that out. Truth and Consequences is your podcast. It can be found on wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you again so much for being here today.
Thanks. It's been a joy. Bye, Tracy.
Bye.